Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We got an hour before our pregame show festivities begin. It'll be a party because it's Saturday and we can do that. We don't even need a reason why. 5:35 starts the pregame show for the White Sox and Red Sox. We will we'll also get you, of course, Ed and DJ right about 6 o'clock. First pitch at 6:10. Your pitching matchup tonight is James Shields and Drew Pomerantz. For the White Sox and Red Sox. Lineups are out as well, and I can tell you a couple things about them. Here's what we're going to do in the next for this next few minutes. Ricky Renteria has spoken with reporters in Boston, so we're going to take a listen to that together. Looking forward to hearing from Ricky and talking a little. Last night's game was, teaching moments all over the place, right? And worthwhile stuff, plus pretty decent baseball and an exciting game to boot. It didn't end the way the White Sox wanted it to. 3-2, Red Sox win it. But I thought a fun game and a couple of learning points for Sox fans in so much as, oh, here's what a couple of these young players can do. Yoan Moncada with 2 late hits. Nicky Delmonico pacing the offense, 3-for-5. I thought it was pretty fun. Carlos Rodon, fantastic stuff. So we'll hear from Ricky in just a few. Your lineup looks like this. Tim Anderson leads off. He's at short. Tyler Saladino is going to play third. Jose Abreu batting 3, playing first. Kevin Smith batting 4, catching, of course. Lurie Garcia is in right. Yoan Moncada is at second base. Delmonico is in left and hitting 7. Adam Engel is in center field, and Alan Hansen DHs. He will bat 9. So I would imagine what you're going to hear from Ricky Renteria has a lot to do with Matt Davidson and Avi Garcia perhaps getting back into the lineup relatively soon. And I will also tell you that although we heard a couple of, we heard Rick Hahn apparently at the Sabre seminar in Boston kind of tease the fact that perhaps Ronaldo Lopez may be on his way up and starting a game late this week for the White Sox. We'll hear whether or not Ricky Renteria gets asked that question and whether he's got a response to it too. So here he is. This just a couple of minutes ago, and felt like bringing it to you, obviously, for the portent of perhaps some news and perhaps some elucidating comments on last night's game as well. Here's the manager of the White Sox, Ricky Renteria.
How impressed are you by the confidence of these young kids? I'm not saying like cockiness, but talking to Bumber today, he's ready to go again.
I think that they take everything with a grain of salt. I think they take their moments, whether they're good or bad, and I think they're doing a nice job of trying to keep them in perspective. I think our kids come in with a note of confidence, not necessarily arrogance, because they're not arrogant. They're just young men, and all of them should be. When you're here, confidence is one of the biggest things that you can carry with you, the belief in oneself. And so, and they deservedly should be that way. And I think that they're going to have bumps and bruises along the way, but as they continue to learn and continue to go out there and execute and do what they need to do, I hope that confidence continues to grow.
Obviously, pretty encouraged today about where he is in his hand.
He's doing very, very well, actually. Like we said, yesterday he took BP. Did some work the day before with soft toss. He said he was feeling good. He's going to take PP today again, and then we'll continue to see how he's feeling after his work sessions. But he's getting treated daily multiple times to make sure that he gets control of that, you know, discomfort.
David said he's taking PP today, too.
Yep, David's going to take BP. I just spoke to him maybe 45 minutes ago. He came in, said he's feeling much better. The discomfort is subsiding. He still feels it in an emotion or two, but we know that there's nothing structurally wrong. That, you know, discomfort for many of us when you're feeling that way is due to a little bit of the inflammation. Obviously, he was hit in a very sensitive area, but he's coming along very well.
Davidson and Moncada hit back-to-back at Charlotte, 1-2, but is that part of the thinking with them hitting back-to-back here now, too, that they're comfortable, familiar, working together?
It's not necessarily that. I think it had more to do with the matchups. It's kind of coincidence that they're hitting back-to-back with each other a little bit. I think that as we continue to develop and kind of grow an understanding of how they're doing and things of that nature, and again, the matchups, right now we are in a position in which we can try a lot of different things. And so we're going to go ahead and take advantage of that opportunity while still trying to, you know, go out and win a ball game on a daily basis.
Thank you.
to the best of our ability.
You picked it up in Delmarva.
Oh, yeah. Delmarva, yes.
You obviously don't like to lose, of course.
No.
You've been saying it all along, but you seem to be taking it in stride, knowing it is what it is, what you're dealing with, what your roster looks like right now.
Well, I have to keep perspective. I think that the worst thing that I can do as a manager, anybody that's leading the group I'm in, is to, you know, accentuate frustration. I'm preaching a certain approach. I've got to follow my own preaching, you know. Obviously, we're looking for the victories at the end of the day. We also do our own evaluating of what's going on during a ball game, what we do, don't do. It would be foolish of me to tell them to do one thing and then me take a different tack. I've got to put it behind me every day and get ready for the next one. Every day we come in, all of us as coaches and players, come in ready to approach this game with fresh eyes and a fresh spirit. It truly is the only way you can perform and have a chance for success in the long term. I think in the end, talent and execution of that talent is what's going to give us the opportunity to win more ball games on a consistent basis. And more than anything, it's the execution.
It's not like this has caught you off guard either. You
know,
no. Going back to spring training, you can kind of look ahead and see that this was possible.
Well, I thought, you know, even from spring training, we continued to be consistent even today with the message. We're going out there to try to win every single day. We knew that there might be a time in which change was going to start to occur. We were going to lose a number of bodies, but that does not take away from the confidence level that I have in these young men and what they're capable of doing. The difference is going to be how consistently they're able to come out and perform and do and act in certain situations that give us a chance to either drive a run in a key situation, execute a pitch, and then we have to learn from those things. But no, I mean, obviously it's not catching me off guard. I think all in all, I'm still very, very confident with all the men that we have here right now.
That's White Sox manager Ricky Renteria. A couple of updates there. Sounds like Matt Davidson's getting back into the swing of things fairly soon, just waiting for a lot of that discomfort to go down. He's out of the lineup tonight. Kind of the same situation for Avi Garcia, though it's kind of still up in the air as to whether or not he's going to take any rehab games down in the minor leagues. You can join the White Sox in honoring Chicago area police and fire departments this Thursday, August 10th, for Police and Fire Night. The first 10,000 fans receive a special Police and Fire Night commemorative t-shirt presented by UL. For more than a century, UL has been committed to fire safety. Learn more at ul.com/fire. To purchase tickets for the game, visit whitesox.com/PDFD. That's whitesox.com/PDFD. Or, as always, call 866-SOX-GAME. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start getting into the month that was for the Chicago White Sox and kind of refresher course on all of the prospects that got picked up. Baseball America actually ranked all of the prospects that were traded over this deadline. Kind of cool. We'll let you know where all the White Sox prospects acquired fell in the rankings. And it's really kind of a whole large pot of farm report coming up after this. So we will begin the farm report. That's coming up next on WLS AMA 90.
What the hell's going on out here?
White Sox Weekly Farm Report.
We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present.
Candlesticks always make a nice gift, and maybe you can find out where she's registered, maybe a place setting or maybe a silverware pattern.
On WLS AM 890.
Okay, let's get to it.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. Really, the whole rest of the show is a big, giant farm report. Because what I wanted to do on this show, and the reason I've been looking forward, I said this right off the top of the show, the reason I'd been looking forward to the August 5th edition of this show is because that would be our first one after the MLB trade deadline. And I think everybody in baseball, everybody knew that this trade deadline was going to be a giant one for the Chicago White Sox. It indeed was. And will continue to be. I mean, that'll be a month of transactions, of baseball, that will shape this franchise for years and years and years to come. Just the way they did it. So what I wanted to do was look back through some of the transactions that got made, but specifically, you know, I didn't want to talk necessarily about the players that left, not at this point, more than we likely will in many shows to come. And I didn't want to talk about the deals themselves, how they came together, what might have been out there, the timeline and all that kind of stuff. What I wanted to do was highlight the prospects that the White Sox got back and maybe just try and remind everybody who got what in which trade, where they went, and what they've been up to. I mean, that's kind of the basis of a farm report. We're going to see a couple of these guys pitching and hitting in the White Sox system over the next couple of days here as the rotation kind of rolls around. For instance, I believe it is the Winston-Salem Dash. We'll get a Dylan Cease start at some point in the next 2 days or so, as long as they don't get rain. There's been so much rain throughout that whole Southeast. But what we're going to do is start with this. General manager of the club, Rick Hahn, spoke at various points after all of these trades, whether it was on a conference call where the audio quality is suspect. We're going to play it for you anyway because he's the GM. I'm not. Or whether it was in the clubhouse or you know, bowels of Guaranteed Rate Field and talking about these guys acquired. So what we'll start with, if you remember, these trades went like this. July 13th, Jose Quintana was traded to the Cubs for Eloy Jimenez, Dylan Cease, Brian Fleta, and Matt Rose. Here's what Rick Hahn had to say on a conference call when he surprised everybody with the deal on July 13th.
We feel in this package of prospects that we received today, not only was far and away the best offer, best possibility that we've discussed with any club since we started this process, you know, roughly a year ago or so, but it's one that allows us to continue to add to the prospect base that we've accumulated in a potentially high-impact way. Obviously, everyone's familiar with Eloy from his time with the Cubs. We view him as one of the most exciting prospects in the game today, potential middle-of-the-order impact bat, plus bat speed, feel for the barrel, uses the whole field, and the tools to be a plus defender on the corner. It's not every day you get access to a potential talent like this. Usually it occurs only via the top of the draft or international moves, like similar to what we did with Luis Robert a few weeks back. But moving a player like Quintana gives you the opportunity to add talent like this, as well as Dylan Cease, who was a player that we coveted in the draft as well. However, the Cubs beat us to the punch in getting him done for the, I believe it was $1.5 million when they took him in the sixth round. He's got a potential front end of the rotation starter, three-plus pitches, and tremendous makeup. The other two players, Latte, whose name I'm maybe butchering, and I apologize to him in person when I talk to him, and Rose are interesting prospects and guys who are still developing and will help round out our system. But we certainly feel we've added additional impact talent to the organization, and again, we feel we're closer to our long-term goal of putting ourselves in a position to go on an extended run and contend for multiple championships here in the not-too-distant future, hopefully.
So that was the initial take from Rick Hahn on that trade of Jose Quintana. Eloy Jimenez, obviously the headlining piece coming back. Rick would say at points in this conference call that the deal doesn't happen. In fact, he'd say that there was nothing for us to talk about with the Cubs if Eloy wasn't included. He gave kind of a much more in-detail thumbnail on Eloy.
You know, we view him not, and I think the industry as well, so it's not just our potentially biased opinion or subjective opinion. We view him as similar to Moncada, where probably Yoan was in his development perhaps a year before we acquired him, with the potential to grow into a potent offensive force. Again, one of the more exciting prospects in baseball with a diverse skill set that can impact the game multiple ways. There's nothing for us to talk about with the Cubs without Jimenez being part of it. And to Dio's credit and his people's credit and the entire Cub organization, in the end, I think they saw what we saw, that from a logic standpoint and from a baseball standpoint, this deal just made too much sense for both sides. And neither side let any non-baseball factors interfere with the decision to move forward and do what is best for each of the two clubs based upon where each of us are in our respective success cycles, so to speak.
Eloy Jimenez was voted Minor League Player of the Month for July since coming over to the White Sox organization. In fact, remember, he just crossed over the other dugout. They were playing the Myrtle Beach Pelicans at the time. That was his old team, Winston-Salem Dash, his new team. Since coming over, he's had 71 at-bats. All he's done is hit .352. His on-base is .418. He's slugged at .690. He has 5 home runs for the Winston-Salem Dash. He is absolutely tearing up. And really, though he was having a good season up to that point, a very, very good season. I don't want to sell it short. Very, very good season up to that point. He has seemingly stepped it up since then, and really kind of turned things on to the point where I wouldn't be surprised if Eloy Jimenez, as long as they feel he's become accustomed to the coaching and how the White Sox like to get things done, if there he's got a promotion left in him before this season is out. Dylan Cease, one of the big arms coming back. We'll let you know how he's doing down there in A-ball as well. But first, here's Rick Hahn on Dylan Cease.
Again, we view him as a potential front-end of the rotation starter. Obviously, he is being eased back into that role following the Tommy John surgery coming out of the draft. And following, he actually recently had an ankle sprain that caused him to miss a little bit of time. So this is a year where, you know, not too dissimilar from OPEC. It's a matter of him taking the ball every fifth day and getting a full year of development under his belt. From a stuff standpoint, it's returned to the level, it's probably returned to the level that we projected it to get to during the draft. He certainly has three potential out pitches and a work ethic and makeup that allows him to potentially be that front-end type guy.
When you hear three potential out pitches in a scouting report, that's a good thing. That should pique your interest. Dylan Cease has made four starts for the Kannapolis Intimidators, 18.2 innings. He has struck out 25 and walked 10. He had Tommy John surgery leading up to that draft, his draft. And obviously the injury concern and getting back to baseball shape and getting deep into ball games are the tasks for Dylan Cease, but the strikeout levels have definitely been there, and the walks have been, kind of what you'd expect, I think, from a guy with his past, I suppose. Those were the two big ones. Matt Rose and Brian Fletta also acquired in that deal. Rose has played a handful of games with the Winston-Salem Dash, 266, 324, 453, the slash line there. Not too shabby for Matt Rose since coming over. I have misplaced the sheet that had Bryant's stats on them, so I'm going to get you that after a quick break. When we come back, I'll let you know this. We'll continue on with the Yankees deal. About 5:15, we'll talk to Scott Merkin of MLB.com, get the latest from Boston. But before we hit the break, I'll tell you this, and it'll be our little segue. Baseball America released a list of the 61 prospects traded in that deadline kind of range. They went back through most of July and ranked all the prospects that changed hands. This isn't a top 100. I want to be clear. They just ranked in order all the prospects that did get traded. Sorry, helping verb there. And of those prospects that got moved, the White Sox had the first, second, and third come into their organization. Eloy Jimenez was the top-ranked prospect by Baseball America that was acquired by the White Sox. Blake Rutherford, who we'll talk about next after a real quick news at 5 o'clock, he is the second-ranked prospect. White Sox got him from the Yankees. And Dylan Cease, who we just talked about, the fourth-ranked prospect acquired, according to Baseball America. Willie Calhoun, actually, who got picked up by the Rangers from the Dodgers in that deal for Yu Darvish that just beat the deadline. Willie Calhoun was number three. And Dustin Fowler, the young man who busted his knee up on that catch at Guaranteed Rate Field on the right field wall. He's hurt, but is still the fifth-ranked prospect acquired. The Yankees gave him up for Sonny Gray, amongst another two prospects, I believe it was. All right, 5 o'clock news is next. We'll continue on with the Yankees trade and let you know what some of those young men like Blake Rutherford have been up to since getting into the White Sox organization. You've got WLS AM 890.
Steve Dahl is here. Weekday afternoons 3 till 7 on WLS AM 890.
Been going through all the trades the White Sox made over the last month. It is a franchise-defining month for the White Sox. You got White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. Friday, August 11th is Rock and Roll Night, presented by Guaranteed Rate, as the Chicago White Sox take on the Kansas City Royals at 7:10 p.m., Rick Hahn says you should buy tickets for that game. Join us as we rock out to live cover bands before and during the game. Plus, be sure to stay for the post-game fireworks show. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com. Went through the trade of Jose Quintana, and we're just looking at the prospects the White Sox picked up in these deals and just kind of making it our farm report for the afternoon. We will pick things right back up with the big-time trade that sent Todd Frazier, Tommy Kahnle, and David Robertson all to the Yankees for Blake Rutherford and a couple other prospects. We will let Rick Hahn tell you about those gentlemen right now.
This deal's a little bit different from the other ones we've done, but it accomplishes the same goal that we set out from the start, and that is to add as much potentially impact talent to this organization. Blake Rutherford, who headlines this deal, we view him as a similar caliber player to some of the position players that now head up our top prospect lists, a potential impact bat, left-handed hitter, who has a chance to stay in center field and provide us not only with a quality at bat, but also quality defense. Over the last few weeks, we've spent a considerable amount of time surveying the market for each of these players individually and decided that the more prudent path to acquiring more talent similar to what we have over the last several months, the best path to acquiring the highest impact, potential impact talent, would be to bundle these players together. So I know it's perhaps a little surprising, especially given what we had done over the last several months in terms of these individual trades, to see three players of the caliber of Todd Frazier, Tommy Kahnle, and David Robertson all in the same deal. But in order to get the caliber of return that helps continue the process that we've started here over the last several months, we felt this was the most prudent path to getting the most impactful talent in the organization. Ian Clarkin, left-handed pitcher who is in Tampa right now, obviously a former sandwich pick, has had some injury troubles along the way, but hopefully those are behind him. At age 22, he is having success in the Florida State League. Has command of three pitches, knows how to locate, and is an interesting guy with some upside that I look forward to having in the organization, working with our coaches. Tito Polo, center fielder, who's gotten off to a torrid start in center field, can run a little bit and swing it. And Tyler Clippard obviously helps fill a void created in our bullpen here today, a veteran presence and someone who can help with some of the innings that have been vacated.
Rick, in Rutherford, you get a guy that going into his senior year in high school was some people rated as the best player in that draft.
Yeah.
Just how high do you see his ceiling and how excited are you to be able to get a guy that has that pedigree?
We're extremely excited around here. Blake was a guy who was very high on our draft boards. We debated him right up through making the pick last year. He has numerous supporters throughout the organization who have been championing his cause since his amateur days, since that senior year of high school. I don't like putting comps on players, but we do view him as having an extremely high ceiling and a guy who, you know, when you start looking around at the Eloy Jimenez's and Luis Robert and Yoel Moncada's, that he fits into that potential mold of a potential high-impact offensive player who can also help you defensively.
You can check Clark as a starter going forward?
We do. Again, we got to get to know these guys. And as I've pointed out, he had a little bit of injury issues in the past. So let's get to know him and see how he handles the workload. And if he does, for whatever reason, wind up in the pen, then he could certainly be a value there as well. But for now, we view him as a starter. We're giving him that opportunity.
Ian Clarkin has started one game at the Winston-Salem Dash. It's the high A level. He went five innings and struck out four. He walked five. Getting things together is Ian Clarkin. Blake Rutherford has hit .285 with an on-base of .346 and slugged .387 in his time with the Kannapolis and Intimidators. He and Jake Berger and Jameson Fisher and Gavin Sheets have all worked together to provide some pretty powerful offense for the Intimidators the last couple of weeks since the deal. Those are the big trades. Of course, Dan Jennings and Anthony Swarzak moved as well. Melky Cabrera, too. But we kind of ran up against it, what with Ricky Renteria talking a little bit and the potential news of a Ronaldo Lopez call-up. We're going to go to break real quick. When we come back, we'll talk with Scott Merkin of MLB.com and get the latest on what's going on with the Chicago White Sox out there in Fenway and see whether or not Friday's game is one that you really should get tickets for. We'll find out next. WLS AM 890.
Talk evolved. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. We got you for another couple of minutes before we get ready for the pregame show that starts at 5:35. We have been doing a couple of things here on White Sox Weekly this afternoon. going back through the month of trades that the White Sox had. Of course, you know, big franchise-altering, future-defining type stuff for the White Sox over the last month. And I think, you know, even though we'd prepared for it, at least here on the show, we'd prepared for it, I think it's been kind of incredible to watch it all happen, to watch it all actually happen. You can head over to the website, WLSAM.com, and check out a conversation that I had with Assistant General Manager Jeremy Haber this afternoon. Just click on the old White Sox Weekly tab, and you can listen to that. You can also, in case you're driving around and just about to get out of the car, you can also listen to the conversation I'm about to have in live, real, God's honest time with Scott Merkin of MLB.com. Merk joins us now. What's up, Merk?
Are we talking Batman again, Connor, or is it White Sox this time?
No, we can talk Batman or White Sox, whichever is more comfortable for you.
Let's just go White Sox. I think we did. We paid our tribute to Adam West the last time I was on the show,
That we did. That we did. What is going on, Scott Merkin of MLB.com, with the whole Ronaldo Lopez thing? What? And Rick Hahn made a little news at Saber Seminar. What do we know?
Let's not forget at Scott Merkin on Twitter, too, if you're going to give the whole resume.
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
You know, I think Rick learned that it's best to not say anything, even if you're trying to be honest. And albeit a Saber Seminar charity event, very good cause. And he was speaking, and he told us today that someone asked him if, you know, what should he tell his son about when some of the pitching prospects are going to come. And Rick said, you may want to have him buy a ticket for Friday, buy tickets for Friday. And then, you know, he kind of danced around it a little bit with us and didn't conclude anything for sure. What we basically know is Ronaldo Lopez is coming up here at some point, and he's going to be up here before September 1st. That's almost a guarantee. He's pitching tomorrow for Charlotte. I believe it's tomorrow afternoon. And then I would guess he starts Friday for Kansas City. That's just my guess. And, you know, reading off a little bit of what Rick said at the Saber Seminar, the charity event, you know, for the Saber Seminar. But I mean, it wasn't like it was, you know, that Rick announced he was buying another franchise and moving it to Chicago or something like that. He announced kind of what we thought was going to happen. Ronaldo Lopez has earned his way up there, and I understand they want to protect innings. I understand that they want to put him in a good matchup for his first outing and everything there. And if you think about after that, I should say, and if you think about it, if they don't, you know, they're not pitching at Fenway and you're not facing Houston, which is a record setting offense. Brutal. Now Kansas City is, you know, red hot, but I think that's probably a little more in the ballpark for a first start with him. And then he's going to probably, you know, not pitch in those two games in Dodger Stadium because they have an off day Monday, and then comes and throws in Texas. And then from there, I think it's almost all AL Central opponents in September, except for a series against at Houston. So, you know, he didn't go into any detail about how many more starts he'd make for the Sox or, you know, so forth and so on. One of the other reporters asked him about Giolito, and he wouldn't commit to that, you know, so it's just basically, you know, generalities, but I think you'll see Ronaldo Lopez very soon with the White Sox. And I think, you know, Rick usually talks the first day of the homestand pretty faithfully. So
right.
I think you may hear more on Tuesday. Maybe he doesn't just want to say it with the young man pitching in Charlotte. I'll let him focus on Charlotte tomorrow.
So Scott Merkin, MLB.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Scott Merkin. What are the benefits? What are the pros? What are the cons? Why not just wait until September 1st to bring him up? And, you know, in your mind, is there a reason the White Sox should have brought him up earlier, I guess?
No, I think they've handled this year almost letter perfect with the prospects. You know, I think they have been accused before, not accused, but pointed at, and probably, you know, somewhat rightfully so, where they may have rushed prospects a little bit. I don't think it's happened too much recently, but this year, as part of this rebuild, they said, you know, there's not going to be any movement just to kind of validate moves they've made. They're not going to be any movement just because a spot opened up on the roster. They're going to be up when they've filled every, you know, the answer to a question they had. They've dotted every I, crossed every T. There's a spot open for them. And when, even if, you know, like Rick said, even if it's not meaning like Lopez is striking out 15 a game and has a one ERA, even if they feel like the next challenge he really has to grow is to pitch at the big league level, that's when they're bringing him up. So, you know, they worked it perfectly with Moncada. You know, I know people will kind of do the suspicion theory that, you know, it had something to do with service time and all that, but I really believe more than anything is they wanted to make sure these guys were ready. And I will say this, Connor, we were talking about this before the game with Rick and Ricky Renteria, that, excuse me, this group that's come up here is very confident, not cocky, but confident, not arrogant. Like, I talked to Aaron Bummer today, who gave up the walk-off home run to Moreland last night, and his response was, you know, it's going to happen. I'm ready to pitch. Give me the baseball. Let's do it. You know, so I think that's kind of a tone Ricky Renteria set with this group from spring training. He was very involved from the top of the organization to the lowest level of minor league ball. And I think these guys believe, you look at Moncada, who started 4 for 42, and, you know, he didn't seem to flinch. You know, you didn't see him sitting in his locker with his head down. You know, he's taken the right approach. It's just not falling for him right now. And he had two hits last night. Delmonico the same way. He's hitting the ball real well, but he looks, you know, while he's kind of learning left field, looks great out there. So it's a good thing to have among these young players.
What kind of conversations have you had with White Sox coaches or even Moncada himself, as best we can talk to him, about his patient approach at the plate? He's taken a lot of pitches, and although I think we knew that strikeouts were always going to be a part of his game, given who he was coming up through the minor leagues, I don't know that I expected as many strikeouts looking as he's had.
We talk mostly about Michigan football, which Moncada doesn't seem to care
about.
Sure,
that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
I might have to have a new topic for him. No, I think, you know, one of the things that Todd Steverson stresses hitting coaches, you know, hit your pitch. Doesn't necessarily have to be the fifth pitch of the at-bat. It might be the first, might be the ninth. And don't get yourself out. And that's, you know, been a problem with some young hitters in the past, not just the White Sox, all over. And, yeah, I think Moncada's probably missed some pitches that he could have hit, but in the same sense, he's not expanding the zone. He's following his approach. And if that means a few early strikeouts and a few early stumbles, that's fine. You know, Mike Trout stumbled early. Ryan Sandberg stumbled early. One's a Hall of Famer. One's going to be a Hall of Famer, most likely. Robin Ventura had a great career. He stumbled early. Not everyone's going to come up and hit, you know, 420 in their first month of the season. So he's learning. And the thing that I think is most impressive about Moncada, the one thing you heard that might be, you know, kind of hit or miss, is his defense has been great. And I think kudos to the White Sox on that, and that they've kept him at his natural spot. And he feels very comfortable and really enjoys playing second base.
What have you heard about Delmonico moving to a number of different positions? You know, in left field last night, he had the error. It was a little ugly, but he picked it up, made the right play, and then he makes a diving catch as well. I know, Rick, you said that third base isn't going to necessarily have any time for him. Does that mean that he's got that Delmonico's got plenty of time out there to grow?
Yeah, I think, you know, nothing like playing, 14 games in the minors and left, and then coming up and saying, you get to play in front of the Green Monster. Good luck, kid. Go have at it, you know? I think it's the defensive equivalent of kind of facing a knuckleball, right?
Yeah,
you're never
going
to see anything like this again. But, yeah, you know, him and Darryl Boston every day working before the game, doing some, you know, doing extra outfield work. And Debo was telling me today that they came to the park and there was a little bit of rain, and Delmonico said, let's get to it. So that's what's going to happen. He's going to be, you know, left fielder, DH, it looks like, with the White Sox moving forward, and especially in the interim. He's got a great capacity to learn. He's willing to learn, and he certainly can hit the ball. There's no doubt about that. So, you know, he seems to have really kind of entrenched himself favorably in this organization, and I think they like the fact that, you know, he has no problem switching positions and fighting to get better at it.
Yeah, I got a feeling a lot of White Sox prospects, with very few exceptions, are going to learn more positions than just the ones they're playing right now in the minor leagues. Versatility is big.
I mean, it's invaluable to a championship team, right? I mean, look at the Cubs last year, the MVP of the National League. How many positions did he play? You know, I mean,
yeah.
He played third, he played right, he played left, he played first, starting Chris Bryant, of course. So, I mean, you know, I think it's the way of baseball now. You have to have guys like that who, even if they're frontline players for you, they've got to be able to, you've got to have that flexibility. It's one of the ways to win in the major leagues.
Yeah, Merck, thanks. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again
anytime,
soon.
Anytime, Connor.
All right, Scott Merkin of MLB.com. Yeah, Scott brings up a really great point. You have to have versatility, and it's not just, you know, the Cubs who won the World Series last year. You look at Bregman in Houston, he's able to play a number of different positions. Benintendi, actually, though he's been primarily an outfielder, he came up as a middle infield guy. Those are really great young bats who are able to play you a handful of different positions because of A, intrinsic athletic ability. You know, that obviously has a lot to do with it, but B, a willingness to go out there and do it. Be a ball player and learn a couple of spots. You know, it'll be interesting to see, looking through some of these White Sox prospects, who's able to branch out and put a couple extra positions on the list. Blake Rutherford, a guy who might have all three outfield spots in him. Eloy Jimenez might not be that guy. You know, defensively, his profile, probably more of a corner dude. We'll see. It should be really fun to watch the development here. And I think one of the things we'll be looking to ask Rick Hahn, if indeed he does speak at Guaranteed Rate Field on Tuesday, as Merck kind of predicted he would, not only about the potential promotions to the White Sox, but what kind of promotions are you looking to do late in the season in the minor leagues? You know, who do you want to add? Who do you want to bump up a level for just a taste here at the end of the season. Maybe Eloy goes up a level. Maybe Rutherford goes up a level. Maybe a guy like Ali Hansen is ready to move up for a handful of starts and see what things look like. Hey, Sox fans, for the first time ever, the Chicago White Sox are offering a limited edition Cancer Ribbon White Sox cap. $10 from every cap sold will aid Chicago White Sox charities and Rush University Medical Center in supporting cancer research. Caps are available in the park and the Chicago Sports Depot and online for a limited time. Visit chicagosportsdepot.com to purchase your hats today. We got to get out of here, Don. Is that where? Oh, that's the music. All right, so that means it. Thanks so much to Scott Merkin of MLB.com. Thanks a ton to Jeremy Haber, assistant general manager of the White Sox, for joining the show today. Thanks to Don Kleppen and Dave Zaslavsky for their help putting this whole thing together. If you missed any of it, even a single second, WLSAM.com has the whole podcast. Speaking of podcasts, don't miss The Cycle. It's the Sox signature podcast. Comedian in Chicago and Pat McGann, along with a rotating group of co-hosts, chat with athletes and celebrities about sports, life, and everything in between. Visit and subscribe via your podcast app today. I'm Connor McKnight. The White Sox pregame show starts in a matter of minutes. White Sox and Red Sox coming up right here on WLS AM 890.
Been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the proud home for White Sox baseball.